I went down this rabbit hole on cryptography. It just connected these two things, like this tech path I was looking at and this economics path. And I was like, holy crap, like this is going to completely change the world.
You're listening to Because of Bitcoin, a podcast that shares the personal stories of how Bitcoin is having a real impact in people's lives, including mine. I'm your host, Mauricio Di Bartolomeo, the co-founder and CSO of Ledin. And without further ado, let's get started with today's story. As the Bitcoin network grows exponentially, both in terms of active users and transactions processed, it has undergone some growing pains. Bitcoin is a teenager after all. In short, you can't take any system from zero to billions without making some upgrades or changes. And changes have trade-offs. What does this mean in practice? If you've been around long enough, you've probably experienced a surge in transaction fees and processing times when the Bitcoin network gets congested. There are many ways in which this can be solved, but each solution has different trade-offs and implications for the future of the network and how people interact with it. This challenge has been on the radar of the Bitcoin community for quite some time and has been the source of heated debates around scalability solutions. As you may already know, Bitcoin's blockchain can only handle about 7 transactions per second, which is not enough capacity to process everyone's coffee payments. No one wants to be holding up the line at the grocery store having to wait 10 minutes for the transaction to confirm, and on top of that, pay $1 or more to process your payment. Fortunately, there are several working solutions to this problem already in production. One of these solutions is the Lightning Network. This technology is changing the game by facilitating faster and more cost-effective Bitcoin transactions. With Lightning, you can send and receive Bitcoin in seconds, sidestepping the sluggishness and the high fees of the Bitcoin main chain. But Lightning isn't just about speed. It opens the doors to a world of possibilities, from instant transactions to cross-border payments, all of which leads to easier access and financial inclusion, particularly in the Global South, where transaction costs are a huge limiting factor for people to buy and transact in Bitcoin. Few people in the world know the Lightning Network better than Alex Leishman. He is the founder and CEO of River Financial, a client-first, Bitcoin-only financial institution dedicated to empowering long-term investors and Bitcoin users. With a focus on industry-leading security, robust financial services, and a world-class client experience, River serves individuals and institutions seeking to invest in Bitcoin for the long haul. In this episode, Alex and I dive into the inner workings of the Lightning Network, its trade-offs, and what it could mean for the future of Bitcoin. Without further ado, here's my conversation with Alex Leishman. Alex, my friend, thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me on.
So the way I like to start the show is asking people about their childhood. And I would love to know if you could share a little bit about what it was like growing up for Alex.
I grew up outside of the DC area in Maryland, born and raised in the DMV. You could say I'm from the swamp. My parents are both from West Virginia, so they're from a part of the country that's very different from where I grew up. Overall, had a normal childhood. I wanted to be an inventor and was very interested in tech and machines and like lots of young boys. But one of the cool parts about growing up in the US was I was also around a lot of people from different countries my entire life. One of the cool parts about growing up in that area was an early exposure to very international group of people and learning about sort of things outside of the US. Fast forward, I went to University of Maryland, studied aerospace engineering there. And while I was in school, I got really interested in economics. The first book I read was Basic Economics by Thomas Sowell. And that really sent me down the rabbit hole of free market economics. And then eventually I came across these ideas of Austrian economics and guys like Friedrich Hayek and Ludwig von Mises, and ended up reading The Denationalization of Money by Friedrich Hayek in college, my last year of undergrad. Funny enough, I was studying abroad in China my last semester of undergrad, and there was a Spanish professor that I had for a class. He was from Spain, and he taught an international finance class, but he was an Austrian economist. And then that was like when I really came into this idea of questioning money, questioning why do we have the central bank that we have today? Why is it like this? Why did we go off the gold standard? Kind of all these ideas that you don't really get taught about to ask.
That's fascinating. So it seems to me like the economics bug bit you in college. Was finance or economics a theme at your house, or was it something that you picked up later on?
I've always just been a very curious person. My parents always listened to personal finance talk radio, like Rick Edelman and Dave Ramsey and guys like that. So I always was exposed to the basics of personal finance, which was very valuable, I think. But no, I came into this line of thinking just by reading and being curious and coming across voices that you don't get exposed to in public school and TV. Milton Friedman and Ron Paul and Thomas Sowell and Friedrich Hayek and just all of these other thinkers. And you hear these people and they speak so lucidly and clearly and you're like, how is this the first time I've ever heard these ideas? My family comes from a heritage of very self-reliance and independence from Appalachia, right? That part of the country has those sorts of values. And then on top of that, my grandmother's parents originally came from early 1900s from sort of Lebanon, Syria. It was all the same country back then. And my great-grandpa was a merchant, was an entrepreneur in Pittsburgh. And I remember my grandmother telling me the story of FDR confiscating gold. She taught me about Executive Order 6102. I learned about that later, but just I remember hearing the story. Franklin Roosevelt actually confiscated your great-grandfather's gold, and he wanted to be a really good American because he moved to the country, wanted to assimilate, he wanted to be a really good citizen. And most people didn't actually follow that. I think because he wanted to follow the rules, turned in his gold and got ripped off. And that was like a lesson that I learned growing up. Like the government can do that and there are certain people you shouldn't trust. You get those little seeds when you're a kid, you hear that and then it opens you up to something later in life.
So how does Alex go from aerospace engineering to basically Bitcoin?
I finished my aerospace engineering degree in 2012. And I thought I would maybe go to grad school for aerospace engineering. But towards the end of the degree, it hit me. I didn't see anyone in the profession doing something that I was really excited about. All I saw, the opportunities were like defense contractors and very slow moving things. And I was like, I don't want to be at Boeing and work on designing a bolt for 2 years and then Congress cancels the project. And in hindsight, looking at Boeing now, I made a very good decision not to join Boeing. So I was like, you know what? I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. After going down this rabbit hole, I was like, I had this idea of creating my own money that the government couldn't control. I wasn't aware of Bitcoin at that point. And I wanted to create commodity-backed money that Hayek had proposed. And I didn't know how to actually like do that. I ended up just going into management consulting for a year. And I didn't like it. And that's when I came across Bitcoin during that. I did some online classes for software engineering. It seems like that's the best path for being an entrepreneur these days. And I did a web application Coursera course taught by Balaji. And one of the projects in that class was building a online website for a charity to receive donations in Bitcoin using the Coinbase API. The minute I understood it, I went down this rabbit hole on cryptography and all this. And it just connected these two things, like this tech path I was looking at and this economics path. And I was like, holy crap, like this is going to completely change the world. And at that point, I knew like I had to move to San Francisco because that was the heart of it back then. And so I basically quit my job. I signed up for a programming boot camp in San Francisco and just moved without anything, any job or anything, and stayed in a friend's place. And I moved at the end of 2013 with this dream of being a Bitcoin engineer. And it was funny, before online, like the Bitcoin community back then, it was still pretty like active. And so I assumed when I got to San Francisco, everybody would be working on Bitcoin in 2013. I seriously thought that it would be really hard to get a job in Bitcoin. Every engineer must be wanting to work on this right now. And I get to San Francisco and there's a Bitcoin meetup, but like outside of that, nobody cared about Bitcoin. And I was like, this is crazy. This is the biggest asymmetric upside opportunity like ever. And so I got a job at a Bitcoin startup called MyCoin. It was like Coinbase for Taiwan, helped build that platform out for 2 years. Then I had no plan to do this. Ended up applying to grad school, realizing I really just wanted to get a better education in computer science. I learned a lot from Dan Benet, who was a professor at Stanford. I took his Coursera cryptography class online. And so applied to grad school there for my master's and got in and ended up being one of the few grad students who was interested in Bitcoin. So I TA'd the first Bitcoin class at Stanford. Just like all the serendipity just kept adding up. And fast forward, basically, before starting River, I was at an investment fund called Polychain Capital. I was doing some engineering there and also helping lead some investments in Bitcoin companies. And great opportunity. I love the guys there, but I realized that I'm just a builder. Like I wanted to build my own company. I wanted to build this Bitcoin bank. And so that's what led to River. So raised money and started River in 2019.
That's amazing. Before we get into River, was there a general philosophy, or what was your main big idea when you started River? Was this something that you did? Was there anyone else that was instrumental in it? Was there a moment where you said, this is what I need to do?
Yeah, there was. River was a company I had basically always wanted to start since before I knew about Bitcoin. I wanted to build this bank with this alternate money. When I learned about Bitcoin, I saw this company, Coinbase, was already really killing it and building cool stuff. And so I was like, okay, I'm glad somebody's doing it. I guess it's not going to be me right now. And around 2017, 2018, I saw the industry really start to veer in a different direction. So my realization was, or my theory was, that everybody was running up towards a local maximum, which is this business model of building infrastructure for trading lots of different digital assets. There was a very clear path to making a lot of money in the short term, with Coinbase going multi-asset, adding thousands of coins and lots of different tokens, and really building this whole sort of gamified sort of system. But it seems to be distracting people from building this, like, really pushing towards making Bitcoin the money of the world. Because I've always deeply believed Bitcoin and Bitcoin alone was on a trajectory to become this world reserve asset and truly be the thing that disrupts the biggest institutions of all, which is governments and central banks. And so I was like, what if we took this other path, right? Where instead of this mountain over here, which we know is hot, is big, and will make money, and there's a clear path, there's like fog on this path, and maybe there's like a bigger mountain in the distance, but I don't know. And that's like the high level idea behind River. That's honestly what I started with.
I think in some ways it's similar to some of the philosophies that we have at Ledin, which is like doing a few things and doing them very well, which is something that I, as a builder or as somebody that creates a company, you always have these big goals at the beginning, but you got to start small. You got to wow a client somehow, and it can be just a small transaction, one product, the first product that you're selling them. And there needs to be this experience, this wow experience. And I distinctly remember from River, when I saw you guys come out, you would send a personalized letter to each person that would sign up for River, and it would have a Zimbabwe bill, and it would have a handwritten note by you. And as a person that was in the field or in the arena, that immediately piqued my attention. And I was like, these guys get it. These guys are going to wow their clients. They found a way to wow their clients.
So the business that we started with, and the business that's still our main business, is Bitcoin brokerage and custody. So we really started focusing on the higher end of the market in the US. And because we realized that was the biggest opportunity. We heard all the time that, and I very much respect Coinbase as a business. They've been instrumental in building this industry, but they were so big even back then that if you had $1 million, even $10 million in your Coinbase account, you couldn't get somebody on the phone to help you with a problem, which was totally unheard of in financial services. Like, people with that level of wealth get somebody on the phone. And we realized there was an opportunity to basically build, to start up market and basically build like a Bitcoin private bank in the US, like a First Republic. Not Goldman private client, but like the First Republic type, mid upper end of the market. And that's where we were able to do these things that, you know, didn't scale, right? Like sending handwritten letters and a nice care package and giving really great client service and having this focus of having a smaller number of clients, but higher value per client. And that's really where we started, because that's where the opportunity was in the market. And we still, that's like our bread and butter client is, I would say, in the US. They're making six figures or more, up to high net worth individuals with millions of dollars in their account. That's still like a really core business. So to contrast it to Ledin, like, we're focusing on consumers. We're really good at US. We don't do consumer internationally. Like, we don't have the chops like you guys to serve like a LATAM consumer market. And so that's where on the consumer side we play. We also, though, have a Lightning Network infrastructure side to the business. And so our API for Lightning Network transactions, which was the result of building Lightning Network infrastructure from the very beginning. We always supported Lightning Network deposits and withdrawals at River because we were Bitcoin only, so we could afford to always have the cutting edge services. Eventually, other people wanted access to that. And so we started offering that via API. And now we're serving a number of apps worldwide. We power the Chivo app in El Salvador and other apps in other countries. And what we realized was, even though we're not the right people to directly serve consumers internationally, our tech can power the people who do. And that's how we're contributing to Bitcoin as this global currency for everybody
thank you for talking or spending a minute on this concept of things that don't scale. I think as a builder, every founder, every builder, everybody that's thinking about starting a business should think about these things that don't scale. I think Paul Graham says you need to do things that don't scale at the beginning. A similar example for Ledin was Canadian banks don't allow same day disbursement. So if I have an account at TD and I want to send you money at Bank of Nova Scotia, there's no way that can take one day. I can't do that in the same day. When Ledin came to be, we offered same day disbursements for our loans. And this comes from Venezuela. And everybody was shocked. Canadians were shocked that we could get money in the same day. This comes from me having to trade OTC in Venezuela when there was all these restrictions. You just have to set up accounts in every single bank. And sometimes that means you, Adam or I, were walking across from one bank branch to the other bank branch so the person would have their same day deposit. And people would rave about this stuff. Obviously, every path is different. But I think when I saw that, when I see somebody does something that wows a client, as well as you guys did, you were on my radar. Now, I love what you guys are doing in Lightning, and I think that it's so important that I want people to really get it. And I don't know that everyone listening is fully up to speed what Lightning is, but can you give maybe a 1 minute primer or 30 second primer on what is Lightning?
Absolutely. So making an on-chain transaction on the Bitcoin blockchain is like sending a bank wire. It's slow, it can take a while, and it's expensive. Sending Bitcoin via Lightning is like making a Visa transaction, swiping your credit card. It's cheap, it's fast, it's simple. That's the easiest analogy. Now, the cool thing about Lightning is that it maintains a lot of the decentralization and censorship resistance and security properties of the Bitcoin blockchain while allowing you to make transactions off-chain. And the nice thing about making transactions off-chain is that they can be instant, they can be cheap, and you can send smaller transactions that wouldn't be economically viable to send on the Bitcoin blockchain. Right now, Bitcoin blockchain fees for a transaction can be anywhere from 50 cents to sometimes $50 when things are crazy. And so obviously, in that sort of fee environment, you're not sending $20 or even $100 transactions on the blockchain. And so that's what the Lightning Network enables. And it started very small. It's an open source protocol. It's not like there's a company that controls the Lightning Network. There are companies that build node implementations to allow you to transact in the Lightning Network. They speak the Lightning Network protocol, but the network is not controlled by anyone, just like Bitcoin. And so on the River app, you have a Bitcoin balance and you can spend or withdraw that balance on the Bitcoin blockchain or on the Lightning Network. And as we've grown, we've gotten seen more and more activity on the Lightning Network, especially as the Bitcoin on-chain fees have grown. Now, more and more businesses are adding support. Coinbase has announced that they'll be adding support for Lightning. Binance supports Lightning. A lot more apps these days support Lightning than they did years ago.
It's a perfect example, I think, on how a company like you that builds the technology, like you very well said, can power a company like us who are focused on serving that market. Something we get asked about a lot is, can I make my transactions cheaper? Can you integrate a layer two for Bitcoin? Can you integrate a layer two for our stable coins? And it's something that we're actively looking at. And so to your point, just to give everyone an example, can you speak a little bit about why did you think Lightning was special?
I had been very close to Bitcoin development for quite some time. I ran the San Francisco Bitcoin developer meetup for a number of years. And so I was pretty close to the ground on the developments across different scaling methods. Some of the ones that have been in the works for a while include the Lightning Network, Liquid, which is like a sidechain for Bitcoin. And those are really the main viable ones. The other ideas have been around, but no one really created a production quality implementation. It became very clear that Lightning was the one implementation of a layer two that at that point had really met the Bitcoin ethos. It was truly open. It was truly censorship resistant. It was very hacker friendly. And it was very obvious sort of how this could help scale Bitcoin. So to me, and Lightning Labs had very quickly built a Lightning node implementation that made it very easy for developers to actually start using the Lightning Network. I would say Lightning Labs has been instrumental in the success of the Lightning Network, Elizabeth Stark and Lalu and everyone who built that company. So that was really the input that I had to our decision-making. It was still very experimental when we added support for it. And it has grown a lot since then. We're one of the largest nodes on the Lightning Network. The Lightning Network is a network of nodes and channels that connect other nodes. And so where we are today with the Lightning Network, I would say, is the Lightning Network is a really great way to move Bitcoin between custodial institutions. And it's still TBD how well self-custody Lightning is going to work for consumers. I'm a bit skeptical about it, to be honest. I don't think it's going to scale well for most people. There's a lot of challenges in scaling Lightning to consumers non-custodially. But as a way to move Bitcoin between apps that are custodial, I think it's almost the perfect user experience.
Bitcoin helps everyone protect the value of their savings. And savings come in different shapes and sizes. People in Venezuela need Bitcoin, but so do wealthy Americans. Both of their currencies are being debased, albeit at different rates. Companies like River and Ledin understand this. You can see it expressed in our product offerings. As you've heard from Alex, River helps high net worth individuals in the US buy Bitcoin. At the same time, it powers the Lightning stack on El Salvador's Chivo app, which helps millions of Salvadorians process small payments on a daily basis. Similarly, Ledin products have helped people in Europe and North America purchase houses and diversify their portfolios. But our loans also start at just $500, and that has helped people in Latin America get money for groceries when they needed it. In other words, we have to build for both ends of the spectrum. I call this the barbell approach. I would love to hear your thoughts from the sort of boots on the ground. Where is Lightning making its biggest impact?
Boots on the ground, it's a much bigger impact in the developing world. I spend a lot of time in LATAM and I see it here. People really use it because it's objectively useful in the US. I would say people use it because it's fun and interesting. Bitcoin isn't super useful as a currency to people with access to dollars. It's not super useful as a medium of exchange for people with access to dollars because a dollar still has perfect product market fit as a medium of exchange. Bitcoin has great product market fit as a store of value, but not as a medium of exchange in a dollarized region. In LATAM, though, where dollars are harder to come by, Bitcoin has much more product market fit as this medium of exchange. We're seeing Lightning becoming increasingly popular in LATAM in a number of different use cases. Obviously, in the Chivo wallet in El Salvador, you can make payments with Lightning. We see lots of cool transactions there, buying mobile minutes and stuff like that. But even more, I've seen a lot of use case throughout LATAM for remittance use cases. There's a lot of P2P. It seems like P2P trading via Lightning is a growing segment. Having somebody in the US send a Lightning transaction to Venezuela or Argentina and then trading that for pesos or bolivares with another party to get money to their grandmother or dad or something like that. And these payment sizes are, you know, $10 to $40, right? Making an on-chain payment would be infeasible. And Lightning really unlocks that for people.
So just to give people some context, when you're trading black market or of real dollars in a place like Venezuela where there's currency controls, to give people just some context, in order to make that trade work, you have to have same-day settlement on both ends. Meaning the person you're buying the dollars from has the dollars in Bank of America, you better have an account in Bank of America because that's the only way the dollars are going to settle in the same day. And if the bolivares you're getting are coming from Banesco, you're going to have to be trading on the Banesco leg as well. So you not only need to find a person that has the amount that matches yours and the timing that matches yours, but the banks that match yours in both countries. So Bitcoin eliminates the need of having the second bank pair. At least you can always trade on Banesco and now nobody has to have the Bank of America or Wells Fargo accounts. So this is one way of removing a massive blocker out of access to dollars in LATAM that people don't often think about. And the second question I have for you is, I've seen a lot of conversations, even with the Lightning team, about stablecoins on Lightning. Mm-hmm. Is that a thing? Do you think that is in the roadmap? What do you think that about that as a concept, as a general idea?
It's certainly on the roadmap, and I'm excited to see where it goes. I think this year, we're going to see some big moves there. I think it's really dependent on the products, the consumer products, to bring that to consumers. And so that's where I think the big unknown is, right? For example, Wallet of Satoshi is a very popular Lightning wallet globally. Will Lightning of Satoshi add a stable coin on Lightning to their wallet and let people move dollars instantly in and out of Wallet of Satoshi in addition to Bitcoin? And so I think that's the big open question. So I think the answer is, I think it will be popular if the wallets build great support for it. Because really what it's competing with is like Tether on Tron, right? So I think the open question to see is will whether it's Tether or some other stablecoin on Lightning be better than Tether on Tron? And will it unlock better consumer experiences for people? And that's the big question. And the answer is we don't know yet. We'll see.
It's funny. I can tell you're very much a first principle, best tech wins. It's a path of least resistance. You can plaster all the marketing and all the money you want, but at the end, it's going to be your bones that hold up the house, and FTX showed us that. You can have all the money in the world, but no engineers. Eventually, you're going to, the fact that there's no engineers is going to be very glaringly obvious. Which is actually, I think, so opposite of so many Bitcoin companies.
Yes. I think one of the issues in the whole industry, not just Bitcoin, but the whole industry is like, because it's such an ideologically driven industry, which is great in many ways, dogma can take hold in business decisions and the market doesn't care about your dogma. And so like, that's actually an interesting challenge in building a company. And I'm sure you guys have similar issues. It's, if you let dogma impact your strategy and your business, you might have a bad time.
It's a challenge, transparently, as a founder, as a builder, you have to walk a balanced line, because if we had ignored the requests from our clients in LATAM to add stablecoins, we probably wouldn't be here. But we had to do that. And at the time, a lot of our Bitcoiner clients didn't quite understand stablecoins or why we were supportive of them, but they just never needed them.
Right.
So all you really had to do was go... Correct. All you really had to do was tell, because my clients were telling me, I don't have an account for you to wire me the loan proceeds. And I don't want you to, even my local bank is the last thing I want you to hit. I don't trust these guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I want a dollar instrument that doesn't touch my bank system.
Yes.
And basically they started saying, I want DAI, I want Tether, I want this. And then we went on this massive search and we listened to our clients and we went and we added this and we talked to the Bitcoiners that asked us questions. We explained to them why we were doing it. But to your point, you can't be everything for everyone, right? Like you, but and if you're not the right things to the right people, the market will make you go away. So it's a balance.
100%. Yeah.
So questions for you as we're wrapping up. What is next for Lightning? What is next for River?
So I think that the phase we're in for Lightning right now is still speed running, getting adoption at all the major exchanges and financial institutions, the Ledins of the world, these custodial institutions that serve the globe. And so then I think we will truly see what Lightning's potential is. And if after that, Lightning is still isn't really, you know, heavily used, then we have some hard questions to ask. And so I think that's going to really inform what's truly next for Lightning. I think Lightning Labs is doing some really cool stuff with stablecoins and bringing assets to the Lightning Network. I think that's like also very interesting, but there's just a lot of unknowns, right? There's a lot of dependencies to see how that really lands in the market. But I think it is super cool. So that's how I feel about Lightning. My thesis is like it's speed running, becoming the default for moving Bitcoin between institutions and smaller amounts. And so what's next for River? Obviously, we're very excited about Lightning, but our main business is here in the US. So we have two major themes we're focusing on this year. One is education. So we're going to be working on some really cool stuff when it comes to making it even easier and more fun to learn about Bitcoin. And that will be available worldwide. And we're also working on serving business clients even better than we do today and building out first-class support for small and medium-sized businesses in the United States. We already have a lot of these types of customers. But I think this is a big opportunity and there will be more and more demand both in the US and internationally for businesses wanting Bitcoin on their balance sheet. There's still a lot of problems to solve there.
Absolutely, man. I'm excited. And I mean, coming from the guy that TA'd the first Stanford Bitcoin lesson, I'm looking forward to your educational content. Any last words, anything you want to add before we sign off?
To those out there just getting into Bitcoin for the first time, don't be intimidated. There's a lot to learn. And guys like Mauricio, you can't go wrong. Ledin is a top-notch company in the space. And I love being friends with builders like you and I'm really happy to be on the show.
Hey, likewise, man. Thank you for coming on. We're huge fans of River and the work that you guys are doing. To reach everyone, the Bitcoin network needs to scale. And so far, Lightning has emerged as one of the leading solutions to accomplish this. With platforms like River leading the way, Lightning adoption is gaining momentum, paving the way for a future with seamless and affordable Bitcoin transactions. Alex highlighted a crucial step in the journey towards Lightning adoption, the push for widespread implementation across major exchanges and financial institutions worldwide. This will be key to unlocking Lightning's full potential, and River Solution can play a big role in making this happen. By making Bitcoin more accessible and enhancing support for businesses, River aims to drive adoption and integration of Lightning technology, and our team at Ledin is hoping to do the same. If Lightning succeeds, Bitcoin will become more accessible to everyone around the globe, and that will be a net benefit to all of us. If you're curious to learn more about River, Alex, or Lightning, I've included all of the links in our show notes. and I strongly recommend their Lightning Research Report. Thanks again, and we'll be back soon with another great episode of Because of Bitcoin. If you enjoyed this Because of Bitcoin episode, I would be very grateful for the 5 seconds it would take you to drop us a review and give us a rating on your favorite podcasting platform. This will really help us reach even more listeners. And if you'd like to learn more about Bitcoin, be sure to check out our newsletter by subscribing at ledn.io. That's ledn.io. Again, this was Mauricio Di Bartolomeo. Stay tuned for our next episode. And until then, muchas gracias y los quiero mucho. Ciao, ciao.